overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
May the sound of the bell bring this room still. May we enter into that beautiful space with... Feel the sound penetrate throughout the universe. And know that the whole world exists within you. And so we're inviting ourselves to have a direct experience today with what I'm calling the inner right of way. That which is within us. That establishes us in a remembrance of a peace that passes all understanding. The peace never went anywhere. The stillness never went anywhere. My Zen calendar this week had a little phrase from Thich Nhat Hanh that said, "Be still and heal." And in taking that simple seminal idea like a seed and planting it within my heart, I realize that when I become still, I do heal. I heal from my narrative, from the torment in my head, from the projections of emotions and fears and concerns and anger and all that stuff that arises. Just by becoming still, I heal. And you know, in the science of mind, they say there's really nothing to heal. There's only this wholeness to be revealed. So you could say, be still and be whole. Be still and be free. Krishnamurti used to say, the silence is explosive. He said, silence isn't something that exists when sound diminishes. He says, the silence is the voice of God within. The little spider in her web knows what it's like to be silent. And so when I look at the spider at the center of her web, I ask her, may I entrain myself to your peace? You're not rushing around like I do all the time. You seem to find peace just staying right where you are. Could I, just for 5 seconds, maybe a minute, hang out with you in the stillness and heal? So this Sunday, we're going to find that inner right of way, that inner way to connect to something that's already there. But sometimes we avoid it because we're so busy, so programmed, so conditioned, so wanting to herd things in our life, to make them under our control so that we feel that we're in charge, when in reality we're not really in charge. There's this presence that's in charge. And as we say in our class, Richard Rohr, he said, it ambushes us at times. It wakes us up. And we are a world that would rather be asleep than awake. Asleep to the possibilities that maybe we are the only problem we have. And that when we step out of our mindset, there is no problem. And so we breathe again. In England, when I was over there, they have what they call public right-of-ways, where people walk through long pathways in the British countryside. And if those pathways are well traveled, it is contingent on that community to maintain those pathways. And so could we also seek to maintain the pathways within that we travel, that take us to a place where we don't go back to sleep, where we stay awake. When I was 21, someone gave me a pathway. It was Krishnamurti. And the pathway was simply this: in oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and to learn, then the door is there and the key is in your hand. But no one gives you the key or the door to open except yourself. And so at age 21, I realized that I must go within. And I must look deeply. And in looking deeply, I must learn. Oftentimes there is an unconscious pattern that keeps repeating itself. A pattern of wanting people's approval. A pattern of unworthiness. A pattern of a need to be in control. And when those patterns are seen for what they are, then the possibility is to no longer follow those patterns, but to have an awareness around them. And then return to that simple inner right of way that says, be still and heal. Someone reminded me this Sunday morning that when they do a chant, they do a prayer that's greater than just their simple words from the head. And one of the chants that comes from the inner pathway within me is, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. And then I rest in the stillness. And I look at the spider. And I hear her singing back to me in a kirtan sort of way. Be still and know that I am God. And I see it in the spider. Be still and know that I am. All there is the I am. Be still and know that I am God. It's all God. And it's everywhere revealing herself. Be still and know. Now this knowing is not a thought pattern. This knowing is a deep, deep abiding awareness of the suchness of life. With heaven as our father, and earth as our mother. And we are the threshold between heaven and earth. We begin to see things differently. And when the things we look at change, it's because we have changed within. No longer trapped in a pattern of belief that we were unconscious of, but awake to the love that we are. Rumi says, don't go back to sleep. Don't go back to sleep. And by asleep, we are talking about this dream that we get trapped in, the dream of me and my goals and my idea of how things should look. It's all a dream. And when we let go of the dream of yesterday, and we don't even get caught up in a dream of a future, something or other, we're free of the dream. And then this awake awareness that might be closeted within, it starts to wake up. And we smile. Because this thing that is awakening within us knows. It knows that the only problem we ever have is ourself. And then we can laugh. My little Zen calendar, which is one of my inner pathways, said this morning, if you blame somebody else for anything, it's as if you have an itch on the top of your head and you're scratching your behind. And I found myself laughing. To blame another is to not be responsible for what is arising within. And so then when anger arises within, you say, oh, there you are, my little anger. And you embrace it. Just like a dog that might be out of control, just needs some love. And when that little angry part within is embraced, it becomes sweet. It just wanted to be acknowledged and heard. And oftentimes the anger, if it's deeply investigated, is simply a hurt. And it's harder to feel vulnerable and hurt, so we get angry. And then we smile at the anger, we smile at the hurt. And in that inner embrace, we found another inner right of way to embrace what is. In the science of mind, there are so many pathways that have been revealed over these many 30-some years of teaching the science of mind. But the simplest one is all is love and all is law. To let the love lead the way. And to really figure out what that is in your heart. And then the law will make the way possible. Because the thing that you're looking for, ironically, is the thing you're looking with. And so once again, it's an inner journey. Jesus, the great way shower, the great teacher, had only one message, and most Christian churches don't teach it. His one message was the kingdom of heaven is within you, and it's all around you, but we don't see it. And the word he used for the kingdom of heaven, this inner pathway, in Aramaic was Malkutha. And Malkutha translated means the sovereign counsel of God. It's within you. Seek it first, and everything will be added unto you. And so this inner pathway, this inner right of way, is getting clearer. But the mind can't comprehend it, so don't hand it to the mind and try to figure out a strategy. But the heart knows. Be still and know that there is that which is within you that knows, even when you don't have a clue. And so then we don't have to figure it out with our mind. These are confusing times on the planet. I have no clue how it's going to unfold. But yet I can know within that there is that which knows nothing of the chaos, and that there is a higher order of being that longs to evolve through each one of its creation. And we are that evolutionary aspect of the divine in human form. And so in this inner right of way, we say, I am a spiritual being, and yet I'm having one hell of a human experience. Could I anchor myself in that spiritual reality, in that peace that passes all understanding, in that love that knows no other, and let them light the way as we journey through those dark times? Yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of our stuff, we don't have to build a condo there. And then we smile again, because we've set ourselves free to be who we are. I hear Ralph Waldo Emerson giving me his inner right of way when he says be and not seem. He says, let us acquiesce, let us surrender into this sacred moment. And then he says, let us get our bloated nothingness out of the way. And in that, we connect with the divine circuits. Be and not seem. Let us acquiesce. Let us surrender to the sacred moment, the sacrament of now. Let us get our bloated nothingness out of the way, and you figure what that is in your world. And when you get this bloated nothingness of you out of the way, and I get it out of the way, in that holy sacred moment, we connect with the divine circuits. So I invite you to take a deep inhalation, knowing that the breath way is an inner right of way, and you exhale, you let go. Feel the alchemy of putting the mind and the heart and the body together, taking a deep breath in, breathing in possibility and hope, and exhaling all that unconscious stuff that no longer serves you, that has you bound. And then when you're willing, open your beautiful eyes and step into this sacred moment. And know that this is the moment that the Lord, the law, has created for each one of us to open to the mystery of belonging to the universe. And we are the way it gets to express in this lifetime. Just like that little spider in her web knows her karma, that little spider knows his karma too. And that little spider knows her karma too. And sometimes you'll get with a crazy dog that'll pull you and break your rib. And you can say, I don't want your karma. And then you can laugh again, because sometimes our karmas are interlaced. If you've been married to somebody for any period of time, anybody out there, you kind of step into their karma too, their cause and effect. And that's good, because then you get to respect them where they are. I have a husband who has a lot of fear about the future, and he awfulizes. And I'm the kind of guy that says, it is what it is, and enter into the moment. And it really irritates him when I ask him to step into the moment, because he likes to live in this projection of what the future might bring. And so rather than go to sleep, I try to stay awake, but travel that middle path where I don't push away something that might be intimidating or make me angry or make me concerned. I don't want to be in denial that that exists out there, but yet I don't want to get entangled in it. So isn't this a beautiful dance that we all get to do in this life that we've been given? This month I'm talking about, what am I talking about? Oh, helping each other stay awake. You know, it would be nice to go back to sleep, wouldn't it? To pretend everything is just the way it is. It's all perfect and happy here. And then you hear about people possibly burning books because they don't want certain things said in the school systems. And, oh, let's just pretend it's all okay. I remember when they wanted to burn Huckleberry Finn because there was a lot of language in there that they felt was racist. But, you know, Mark Twain is one of my heroes. And he's part of our history. So what if when we look back at our history, we can see we had some shadow times, but out of those shadowy times, we evolved and grew into a new order of species on this planet. Then we can embrace the past, because the past brought us to this state of awareness. Mark Nepo, in this lovely book, he talks about not going back to sleep. And he says one of the ways we do that is we come together in community and we remind each other of the truth. In our beautiful revealing services, everyone speaks a truth, and it's all the same truth. Jody so beautifully wove it together. We're all threads in this tapestry. And you know, the truth comes from that Greek word, which means that which unhides itself. So the truth is within us. I love it when the truth starts to awaken an individual. They think, oh my God, once I stopped doing my own way of thinking and fixing and those patterns became conscious, this truth starts to unveil itself. And it's something I already know. 35 years ago, when I would sit in the back where Angkor is, and I would hear the minister saying certain things, I realized I know that. But it wasn't David that knew it. It's this ancient part of me that knew it, that I'm connected to everything. And could I learn to listen to that? In oneself lies the whole world. So Mark Nepo talks about not going back to sleep as a co-creative effort. And you know, there's this beautiful word, collaborative. Collaborative comes from the same root words of co-labor. We're giving birth to a new species together. It's not that David evolves. We're all evolving at the same time. And you know, when you give birth, Jody's beautiful daughter Stephanie is having a baby. I guess labor can be kind of uncomfortable. There's the morning sickness. I've heard that you get sometimes. There is a feeling like there's an alien within you, that you don't know what is this within me. And then there is the birthing experience, the contractions, so that this new life can emerge. Well, now we spiritually are giving birth to a new order of being. And I see it happening in the center year after year after year. Isn't that wonderful to see? Here's how he puts it in this book. By the way, here's the be still and heal. It's a mantra for me. He says, when we can open our heart space between us and enter into the depth of life, the one life that we all share, he says, all to share a truth that emerges from within, he says, then the teacher moves around the room. The teacher is the one who draws out the truth. And so then each one of you becomes my teacher. He says, then the teacher moves around the room, and then the wisdom of the open heart itself appears here, and then it appears there. And it reveals a deeper mosaic of truth that no one person can surface alone. I remember one person was in my class on Wednesday, and they said, will anybody ever love me? And beautiful Susan Jackson turned to her from the truth and said, that's your job to love you. And I thought that was the voice of truth speaking. It's not about looking outside ourselves for love, but finding the love within. The voice of truth spoke. So he says, in moments like this, our stories cure into a remedy that anyone can drink. We get to drink from each other's well, each other's heart. And as a teacher, my hope is to step aside so that everyone can be their own teacher. Remember, the outer teacher takes you to the inner teacher, and the greatest teacher of all is life. So whatever that outer teacher could be, maybe it's the dog that's biting you, that's overly zealous after he plays with his ball. But then he takes you to an inner teacher saying, isn't it wonderful? You know, I would trade a lot, Terry, to have my baby speck chasing the ball and coming back. I miss that so much. And now you get to experience it. As a teacher, my hope is to step aside so everyone can be their own teacher and so that everyone can be their own remedy. Wow. You know what's beautiful about that? You stop looking outside yourself for the remedy. My beloved Michael, he's having all these breakthrough moments. And that's the teacher within showing, hey, there's this pattern. It came up from my childhood, and I'm beginning to see it. There's an IBG movie out there that IBG, Inspired by God, that Trey and I saw on Friday. It's called Belfast. And it was written by Kenneth Branagh and directed by Kenneth Branagh. He's a famous British actor. And what's so revelatory about this, and I think Gigi will appreciate this, he lived through the Belfast, I don't know what they call them.
Famine.
What?
The famine?
It wasn't the famine. It's where they were trying to kill each other. Bombs were being, what do you call it?
The Troubles.
The Troubles. That's what they call it, the Troubles. It starts off 1969, August. He's a 10-year-old boy. And going down the streets of Belfast, they've got cars exploding and people screaming. It was almost like the January 6th insurrection. Catholics angry at Protestants, Protestants angry at Catholics, and he's 10 years old. And so in a strange sort of way, he's having a flashback that he's bringing to the screen so that we all can witness the evolution of being in chaos, and out of chaos, hopefully some new order of being will happen. Now, as you begin to watch this from detached eyes, and being as old as I am, I can remember I was 20 years old when that was happening. There was a sense of order in Belfast. Everybody got along. Catholics did their thing. The Protestants did their thing until this chaotic something happened and the city's on fire. There was an intolerance that emerged. There was chaos, not unlike what's going on in our country at some level. And so here's the witnessing 10-year-old boy with his neurotic mother screaming, I can't leave Belfast even though the streets are on fire. The husband who had to get a job in England because he couldn't find work in the coal mines of Ireland. So he's got a job in London, so he can't be there to help raise the kids. And all this chaos is the background for this movie that's historically true and yet seen from the eyes of a little 10-year-old boy. Now he has the wise old grandfather, he calls Poppy, and the wise old grandmother, Judy Dench, just one of my all-time favorites. And he falls in love with a little girl in fourth grade. Her name is Molly. And he goes to his grandpa and he says, she doesn't even look at me, but I'm falling in love with her. What do I do, grandpa? And old Poppy, in his 80-some years, he starts singing, how to handle a woman. And he's, you know, from Camelot, simply love her, merely love her, love her, love her. And as I'm hearing him sing that song to his 10-year-old grandson, tears are coming down my eyes because I remember King Arthur singing that in Camelot. And the little boy goes to school and he gives the little girl a flower and she smiles at him. And in this memory that Kenneth Branagh was obviously having, you saw the grace of the grandfather's wisdom. And he took Judy Dench in her arms and he started dancing around the room with his grandmother. So here through a memory is the truth coming out from a very troubled time of how to create a new sense of order. And you know what was so revealing in this profound IBG movie was people don't want to change. There is a sense of order, even though it may be total chaotic and fire in the streets. People don't want to evolve. People don't want to change. They stay in their conclusions, in their opinions. And the ones that are really angry want you to be angry with them. And so the Protestants wanted the family to be angry at the Catholics. And here's this little boy, can't we all get along? Can't we all just be one? And in the grace of witnessing something like that is lest we forget. If we forget the past, we may be doomed to repeat it. Tonight there is a thing on CNN, and it's a retrospective of the gays and how they evolved in America through much oppression. And I told my husband about it, and he says, I don't want to watch it. It's too painful to remember. I said, but it's in the remembering of it that we can see how we've evolved, how we've grown, how we've changed. There is a thing on Princess Diana that I've been watching on CNN, which shows those troubled times of this young princess in a turbulent marriage, standing up to the crown, the all the powers that be. She's finding her voice. She's stepping into her own autonomy. And yes, it's uncomfortable, but it's liberating. So I think even a center such as ourselves is a liberating center, where we talk about those uncomfortable things. In the movie Belfast, the little boys in church, the Christian, not the Catholic one, the Protestant, and the preacher's up there, and he's preaching hellfire and brimstone. And he says, you know, there's only two paths. One path goes straight to heaven where everything is pearly gates and streets of gold. And the other path is a zigzag path to the fiery pits of hell. And here's the little 10-year-old boy looking at him. And he goes home and he draws this thing with two paths. And he says, Mommy, which path am I supposed to take? One path goes here and the other path goes there. And then you realize he's living in hell right now on the streets of Belfast. Now, what if the minister had shifted the way he was preaching? And we all know, anybody got the hellfire and brimstone minister out there? I certainly got it as a kid. And we've evolved out of that place. So to remember that we used to think that way, and some people still think that way, but not anymore, because there's been an evolution of consciousness, because we found an inner right of way that's saying, seek the kingdom within you. So then you understand what the messenger was pointing toward. Find a truth that resonates with you. Freedom is an inside job. It's not an outside job. In this lovely class that we're doing, Richard Rohr's Just This, he talks about the sacredness, the sacrament of the moment, and how every moment, just this, right where you are, looking at the spider in her web. I had one of those moments. I had a cataract, and I had a surgical procedure this week. It was minor, but it took about an hour. When I came home from the surgical procedure, Trey would normally ask me, how did it go? Instead, he says, you just won't believe what happened to me. And I said, well, what happened to you? And he says, I was cleaning out the pond. And then, all you know, we have this mesh over the pond that keeps the leaves from falling in so that it doesn't get filled with the leaves. There's all these trees in the yard. Well, a long snake, a garter snake, got entangled in the web and started curling up. And he started having a relationship with the snake like you do with the spider. And he started talking to it. Now, normally he'd be afraid of a snake, but because the snake looked so helpless and it had coiled up and it was in the mesh, he found himself straightening out the snake, and then it would curl back up, and then he'd straighten out the snake. So he went in the house and he got some scissors, and he's cutting the mesh away from the snake, and he accidentally cut the snake. I know Tia's covering her face, but the snake did escape Tia, and he swithered down the path. And so now we have a pet snake somewhere in the garden. What if that was just a beautiful moment of his connection to just this, Mary, just this, just the snake in the garden opened his heart, just a spider in your web opened your heart. And Richard Rohr says, it's all God. It's all God. And he says, it will ambush you. It'll wake you up in strange sort of, it doesn't have to be pastorally beautiful like the botanical garden. Sometimes it's something as traumatic as a snake going to die in your presence if you don't free it. So this is how simple it is and profound. Since so, a lot of you aren't in the class, I know you'd like to be. These readers don't want to work anymore because they said you shouldn't need them. Should. Don't should on yourself, David. He says this. It is an acceptance of the full reality of what is right here and right now. It'll be the task of your whole lifetime to be with what is here right now. You know, I say to my husband, it is what it is, and he hates it when I say that. But that's the task of a lifetime. It is what it is. The snake's in the mesh, and you got to cut it free. It is what it is. The person flipped you off on the highway, and now he's chasing you to the dog park. It is what it is. A guy brought a cart back, and the tray was at the Publix grocery store, and pulled a cart out, filling a cart, says, can I take your cart back to the thing? And then the guy says to Trey, the country's going to hell in a handbasket, and they started to argue, because they were on two political different sides, and I said, holy cow, he might have a gun. Be quiet. It is what it is. Learn to deal with it. It's a task of a whole lifetime, Tia. You cannot get there by any method whatsoever, all capital letters. He says, you can only be there. Huh? It's not a place to get. It's a place that already exists. Now, what is that place? That place is stillness. That place is acceptance. That place is effortlessness. You know, there's so many out here that are doers. And I remember, you know, Jesus pointed the way. And they say for 2,000 years we've been worshiping his finger. He would say things, be like the lily of the field. He says, the lily of the field toils not. Huh. Yet Solomon in all his splendor wasn't arrayed as one of these. So could we live an effortless life like a flower in the garden, like a spider in her web? and not be so zealous about having to get things done and the world's approval or whatever that. Foucault, the reason is that we run around crazy. There's nowhere to get. He says, it's all about being here. The purest form of spirituality is to find God in what is right in front of you. Right in front of you. Huh. The ability to accept what the French Jesuit and mystic Jean-Pierre de Caussade, 1675, called the sacrament of the present moment. You hear me quoting the Bible, and it says, this is the moment the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in it. Jody, in her beautiful closing treatment today, said, bless the moment. What if we could just bless every single moment? The uncomfortable ones as well as the comfortable ones. You know? Then it's okay to have growing pains. It's okay to be sad. You know, I come in here on Sundays and I do all my little chores and I sit in the classroom and I hold the teddy bear that I call Bert and I put on my graceful passages. And it's such a beautiful tape because it talks about that we're eternal beings and that death is a part of life. And when, you know, they say die daily to be born again in me, it's not about the end of your life. It's about recognizing that life is about the background of death. We die to an old idea. We die to a pattern. We die to a resentment. We die to a vision, a dream. And in that death, there's always a birth. So what if we could be playful with that and curious about that? And as I'm holding the teddy bear that I call Bert, I'm realizing he never died.
He's just right there with me and he says, you know I'm not going to go anywhere. And he says, I know the people are going to think you're crazy, but
I sit there and hold that bear and a little tear will come to my eyes and I'll feel the love that's still there. And that's grace for me. That's an inner pathway. Because what we are doesn't die. Adam's lovely wife and son came over the other day, and she's Baptist, and we were talking about Jody's beautiful talk, and when how the nanny transitioned, Jody went to tell her daughter Allie, who was in school, and she said, oh, she already came and told me that she's no longer on the planet. And it was in that moment that Adam's wife said, I held the hand of my grandmother when she was making her transition. And I literally saw when she took her last breath, this swirling blue and purple energy leaving her body. And then she said, it was the same day that I saw a hummingbird of the same color almost zooming past my face and looking at me. And I said, there you go. I said, when Bert made his transition, I'm sitting in the living room and a butterfly came and was pounding on the window. And I said, Trey, I think that's Bert over there. He says, David, you're crazy. There you go again. And so I went outside, and that butterfly was following me around the garden. Now, I'm just saying, it's just the universe is going to have a way of communicating if we can hear it, if we can be tuned into it, like you with that little spider. It wasn't an accident. So the supreme work, Richard Rohr, of spirituality, which is to make presence possible. The presence is within us. It's all around us. To make this presence possible. Wow. It's a whole different goal, isn't it? To let this presence awaken within you. He says that's the whole work of spirituality, is keeping the heart space open, which is the result of conscious love. Conscious love, to keep your heart open, even in those troubled times, even when you're afraid, even when you're angry, keep the heart open. And he said, keeping in our right mind, which is the work of contemplation and meditation. Now, what is right mind? It's, for me, prayer is simply moving from the local mind into the non-local mind. Now, figure that one out. You're not going to operate. You're not the one that does the prayer. You move into this non-local mind, or you could call it the infinite mind, the mind of the universe. That's the right mind. It's not my mind. It's when Jody does these beautiful treatments, she's in the non-local mind. And she's saying, bless it all. And when I bless you and you bless me, we're in the blessing of life itself. Move into the right mind, which is the work of contemplation and meditation, and keep the body alive with contentment and without attachment to its past woundings, which is often the work of healing. I'll read that again. Keeping the body alive with contentment. To find homeostasis within your body. To find balance within your body. You know, the body is a messenger. Sometimes it gives you a painful message, and maybe it means that you just stretch your spine a little bit. Well, the pain went away. Well, maybe that means I'm supposed to sit up. Or if you have a pain in your leg and you do a nice long stretch, whoa, the pain went away. Could I find contentment within my body? You know, and observe the attachment to your past woundings. Some people carry their wounds around and define themselves as their wounds. And what if we could not identify as the wound and call it my problem or my sickness, we could just refer to it as the sickness on the planet. There is an anxiety. There's an existential anxiety on the planet. We all have anxiety, but it's not my anxiety. It's the anxiety. well, then there's just that little detached awareness where you can choose to identify with it or not. And after a while, you say, you know, anxiety arises, but that's not the truth of me. Fear arises, but that's not the truth of me. And then you're free. In that state, you are neither resisting it, nor are you clinging to it. And you can experience something genuinely new. You can find that you can be free in the midst of whatever is arising. But that's a lifetime work. A lifetime work. A lifetime work. So let's see. Did I have anything I wanted to say around here? We meet in the silence. Oh, yeah, that Krishnamurti on Saturday's Zen calendar, he said the silence is explosive. And Saturday was the day that we moved the plants in because we were going to have the hard freeze. And so we're walking around, and I don't think anybody has more houseplants than this particular person. When Trey and I moved down to the south from Maine in 1978, I had a bag of cuttings from a lady who had a bunch of cactuses. Those cuttings now, from 78, how old would they be? 40-some years old. They're all in, there's one cutting that is huge, and she's this cactus that's, so they're like my children. And so I have to bring one in at a time, one in at a time. And then there are outside children too, the plants that are outside, and they're all turning gold and red. And the Camellia sesenquas are in full bloom. This is not the best time for you to bloom because when you have the frost, then all the flowers might get scorched. But luckily, it only got to be 37 yesterday. So in this explosive silence called the garden, there's also awareness. There's also love. There's also a coherent field of resonance. I love what was said in our revealing circle today, that there's a resonating field when two or more are gathered, as Jesus would say, in my name or my nature. And what would be the nature of Jesus? It would be love. It would be non-judgmentalism. It would be forgiveness. It would be acceptance. It would be possibility. And when we gather in that nature, well, then this presence can potentiate itself. So what if something as simple as strolling through the garden, or my beautiful Joshua looking at the spider, thanks to me, now he said in the past I would have just pushed the web out of the way. Now I'm seeing the reverence and the connection. And there's something that shifts then. It was, who is it that said it was Meister Eckhart? He who can see God in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. So stop looking for angels and start looking for God in the smallest of things. And it will start to reveal herself to you in the garden. And then something miraculous happens. You get the bloated nothingness. It just falls away because you're not so interested in your bloated nothingness, you know. You're not interested in your critical nature, your obnoxious nature. My friend Seamus has Arnie the you-know-what, and he can laugh when Arnie shows up, because Arnie's still going to be there. He's a bit of a troublemaker in Seamus's life. And then you realize you're not Arnie. Yes, there's an Arnie in there, but Arnie serves a practical purpose. Sometimes you need an angry Arnie in the world to stand up to something that you don't find acceptable. And so Arnie can come in handy, but he's not who you are. Then you ask that beautiful inner right away question, who am I then? Who am I? Am I free? Or am I caught up in the tyranny of the little me? And when the little me wants to assert itself, you can smile. Ah, you've been down that path before. You've been in charge before. But now I'm choosing a different inner right of way. So let's go within at our closing thing, and I'll ask my friend Raul to go back to the bell. And we'll access that inner right of way and that sacrament of the moment and that stillness that is calling us from within. We have a little sign in the classroom that says, stillness is your perfume. I think it's silence is your perfume. So I'm going to ask you to put your perfume on. Now, this silence is conscious. This silence isn't just empty. This silence has wisdom, it has knowing in it. Think of the silence of the spider. So, Raul, when you're ready, for whom the bell tolls for thee. And in the diminishment of that sound, we realize that it exists within the context of a vast silence. Now, Jesus said to his apostles, when they got upset and the storm was on the sea. He says you took the storm on the outside and you put it on the inside. So now we can ask ourselves, are we putting the storm on the outside and putting it on the inside, or are we putting the silence, this deafening, explosive silence that's all around us, could we also place that within us? And just for this purpose of this experiment of this present moment, the sacrament of the moment, could we allow the silence to expand within the field of our awareness? It is said that silence is the language of God, and everything else is a poor translation. So when we come home to that still point within, we can smile. And it is not us that is smiling, it is this infinite presence that lies stretched within us in smiling repose. It's resting. And it's grateful that we've come home. And so then we affirm, I have arrived, I am home. Home is always there. And we can go there in a nanosecond by ringing a bell, by taking a conscious breath, by exhaling whatever needs to be released with that exhalation. This is the inner right of way. And each one of us gets to discover it for ourselves. So as we rest in this silence and the stillness, we hear Thich Nhat Hanh, be still and heal. Be still and return to wholeness. Be still and be revealed as the one life, the one love, endlessly unveiling herself, recreating herself anew with every breath we take. And so love is on the move. And we are the way that love expresses in this world. And so we wait upon the Lord. Translated, we wait upon spiritual law to operate in us, through us, all around us, according to our belief, according to our expectations. And so we become conscious co-creators, co-laborers with this divine presence as we invite the emergence of love, the emergence of light, the emergence of peace, the emergence of hope, the emergence of faith, the emergence of trust. And we allow. We're not the doer. We allow this presence that knows to express as us. The ego wants to impress the world. The soul wants to express truth. And so when we allow the soul, the imprisoned beauty within, to express as us, then we have no attachment to outcome because we're not the doer. And then life unfolds like the lilies of the field without effort. And all that is required on this spiritual path is the earnestness of heart and the willingness to be here now, the willingness to be love now, the willingness to get our bloated nothingness out of the way in the most loving way so we connect with the divine circuits. Feel that energy of the divine within you. It fills this room. I can feel it all around me. It's palpable. It's real. It's eternal. It was never born. It never dies. So place your hand, if you feel comfortable, over your heart chakra. And to these divine circuits within and all around, let's say, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the presence of the one life within me.
You are the presence of the one life within me.
I feel it all around me.
I feel it all around me.
As my own divine self.
As my own divine self.
Expressing.
Expressing.
Revealing.
Revealing.
Loving.
Loving.
Blessing every moment.
Blessing every moment.
Saying, here I am.
Saying, here I am.
Praise be.
Praise be.
So open your eyes, open your hands. Blessing the world around, blessing the world within. You are the blessing. You are the world. You are the one who make a better place. So let's start giving. Thank you for sending in your tithes. Be safe. And we'll see you next week.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.